I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm glad to be here with you on the America Out Loud Radio Network. So what do we see this week? We saw a lot going on here with talk about security clearances. Do you have a security clearance? I don't have a security clearance. But then again, I'm not in a position where I need to know government details. So we see that several people had their security clearance removed, or at least one did. Our ex-CIA director, Brennan, had his security clearance revoked by the president. And we see our friends on the left screaming and hollering about how this is going to silence him. This is meant to damage his free speech rights. It does no such thing whatsoever. Clearance, which, first of all, I think this brings up a bigger topic for us about this clearance and who has it in our country. Who knows what our government is doing? We, the people, have a right to know what the government's doing, but you know what? They need to have the ability to act in secret and keep things quiet on lots of different topics. So Mr. Brennan, who, as the former CIA director, was out there maligning the president, calling him a traitor, saying all kinds of horrible things around the world, and it seems like he was monetizing that by going on these TV shows. So the question you have to say is, I can see people in those positions. They need to have security clearance so that they can see the documents, the communication, the intelligence to help them run their departments, to help them provide the president with the proper amount of information so he can make informed decisions on national security issues. Why somebody would keep their clearance after they're no longer with the government is where we need to look at this. So as the theory goes, if I am the CIA director under the Johnson administration, and the Johnson administration now closes, I keep my security clearance in case the new president and administration wants to reach back and ask me some questions about some things that went on during the Johnson administration, that I would still have the ability to look over the documents, to read the intelligence and compare it to what I knew from when I was in that position, and then I could provide some guidance and some advice maybe to the president. That seems to make sense. But why people would hold this clearance forever makes no sense to me whatsoever. And not only that, if I lose my clearance the day that my administration leaves and I leave the post, I'm no longer the CIA director, and then a year later, the new president says, I really want to talk to CIA Director Pangaro. I have a question for him. So the president would call me on the phone or call me to the White House, and I would go there, and he could give me a temporary clearance. He could swear me in right then and there, or whatever process they use, and say, I want you to look at these three documents. Based on your experience, what does this say to you? And then I could advise the president. There's no reason that someone has to maintain their top secret clearance after they left the White House in the position. When we see all the people in the FBI that have had to leave, what is it, 10 people, 11, 12 people that were either fired, demoted, or removed from the FBI because of their behavior during the election? If this doesn't sound a bell to the American people and say, this corruption is unbelievable, then I don't know what will. I don't know that we can survive this long term because there is no uproar. And again, we got to look at the media. And they had their big editors, newspaper editors, I think 305 or 350 of them got together, and they were going to write editorials, all joining together, saying that the president is wrong to say that the media is the enemy of the people. Well, I think them just doing that, getting all together, colluding, so to speak, to make a statement like that about the president, kind of proves the president's point. They're not out there about news. They're not looking. How come we're not seeing big reports on, well, let's see, was there any fake news actually went out there? Look at this story, whatever the story would be, where we said A, B, C, and D in the press, and it turned out we were completely wrong. Do they do that? Do they make those kind of corrections? We know newspapers may make a mistake in a story And they'll put the correction on page 32 in a tiny little blurb at the bottom. You know, we'd like to correct the story of June 14th where we said this, and it turns out that it was actually that. Well, that doesn't provide any credibility. Credibility would be right on the front page. Say, hey, 2 weeks ago, we said this and we were completely wrong. And here is the correct version. The reason they don't do that is because they don't actually report news anymore. They shape the news. They run articles and polls and all this other stuff so they can get an answer so that they can report on what they want to report as though it's news. News goes like this. The North Korean government has released the bodies of 55 American soldiers who died during the Korean War conflict. We went to the airbase in North Korea. And we watched them load the remains respectfully onto the aircraft. They were flown to the United States, where they were turned over to the United States military, and they will be moved for burial with all military rights, etc., etc. This was a great thing for the families who have closure now, and the president is responsible for making this happen. That's the news. That's how you would report news. To tell you what happened, where it was like, to give you a flavor of an event without throwing in there, well, this president actually didn't have a lot to do with it. He just happens to be the recipient of the good luck that the North Koreans turned over those remains at this time. That's editorializing. That's completely different. So since our media doesn't actually report the news, they don't go somewhere, they have no curiosity whatsoever to look into things, they're not trustworthy. We can't trust what comes out of their stories and their news shows and newspapers. You have to question everything by saying, well, where's the bias? And you can find the bias by the history. You know, this is something I talk about all the time. The history of a thing will inform you about the future of the thing. So if someone has lied to you on 10 other occasions, and then they tell you something on the 11th occasion, you can pretty much be safe in saying it's probably a lie, because these people have a history of lying. Well, when it comes to the media, we know that they're so biased. They report only the biased things that are out there. Their anti-Trump hysteria is absolutely clear. If they were to mix it up with a story once in a while about the good things that are going on, then I think you would say, well, you don't want they are just reporting. But they're not. So the hysteria that they're coming under with the security clearance being removed from Brennan, as though the president doesn't have a right to do this. The president is the head of the executive branch of the United States government, and if he classifies something, it's classified. If he unclassifies it, it's unclassified. So for him to look at Brennan and say he's not following the rules, because the rules are pretty clear, it tells you that if you maintain a security clearance after you leave your post, you must maintain your behavior as though you still worked for whatever agency it was, which means you don't go running around saying things like the president is a traitor, going on news shows and coming up with these rumors or these biased stories against the president. You just don't do it. And I think what really has the media crazy about this is that they hate any time President Trump actually exercises any presidential power, because they are so upset with the fact that he is the president that the only thing they can really tolerate is that he sits in the White House every day. That's about it, and they really have a hard time even with that. So you look and see, since the beginning of his administration, it has been nothing but he's unfit, he's no good, we have to throw him out, we have to impeach, 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 even though there's nothing to impeach the guy on. They're just jumping up and down screaming impeach, 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 because they just can't stand having him in that position because they thought it was theirs. And we've been over that 1,000 times. But the reality there is pretty clear. Anytime he does exercise any presidential powers, they lose their mind. So one of his presidential powers is to say, I'm removing the clearance from Mr. Brennan. And now he's turning around saying, well, I'm going to remove clearance maybe from Clapper. He's another one out there saying horrible things about the president. He is not maintaining himself as a professional that worked for the agency that he came from or where he got his clearance. I would absolutely remove his clearance. I would also remove any of the FBI agents' clearance that were removed from their jobs, fired, or whatever. As soon as they're under suspicion, I would remove their clearance. They don't need a clearance to function if they're no longer with the agency in good standing. So I would have gotten rid of all of that. So it's just amazing to see the uproar that's gone on over this. Okay, so we're looking around and we're saying, what else is going on that we've talked about that we want to kind of get into a little bit? Apparently, 46 people were shot in Chicago since Friday. 46 more people were shot. And again, I called for this last week. I said, where is the federal agency going in there and protecting the citizens of Chicago? All of the citizens of Chicago should be protected. The people who got shot, I don't care who they are, where they're from, or whatever. They don't deserve to get shot. These are our brother and sister Americans. And if there's a problem in that community, whatever community it is, and people are shooting each other at that rate, we have a responsibility to step in. Because remember, we, the people, are the government. So Mayor Emanuel, who seems to have a great difficulty actually governing Chicago, is having a hard time. How about the federal government step in and send a task force in, like the Joint Terrorism Task Force, something similar to that, where you send in, DEA to handle the drug problems, ICE to help with any illegal things that are going on with illegal personages, the FBI task force to go in there for crimes, and then you send in the state and local police, and you throw them into the mix to go in and patrol the streets and crack down on whatever it is that's causing this trouble. A lot of it, they say, is gang trouble, gang-related problems. So then you go in with a gang task force and you take the gangs apart. And along that line, this is something that I've suggested, and I've tried to actually write the words for a new law, a new act that the local and state and federal government could use. And that is the Anti-Gang Act of 2018. And very, very simply, we know when you study gang activity, street gangs. We know that street gangs are very proud of their gang. They are proud of their affiliation, even if it's a criminal gang that does horrible things. They're very, very proud of their affiliation with the gang. And we know that if when you look into that deeper, that a lot of times young people join gangs because it makes it feels like a family. Maybe they didn't have that at home. They don't have that kind of activity. And I don't mean the criminal stuff. They don't have the camaraderie and other stuff they get in a gang. That feeling of belonging, I think that's been studied for a long time, that they have with the gang. So they join the gang, and they're very, very proud of their gang, their gang name, their gang reputation, their gang colors. You know, you see them, they have hand signs that they're very proud of to show you. They're very proud of the color, whatever their color of their gang is. They wear specific things like that. So my act, Gang Control Act of 2018, would basically kind of fall in lines with the RICO statutes. It would be sheer membership in a criminal gang. Now, that's where you got to be crystal clear. Criminal gang. Right, we're not talking about membership in the Key Club or membership in the local Rotarians Club. We're talking about membership in a street gang, a criminal street gang. The Crips, the Bloods, the MS-13, any of these gangs that go out there and commit crime as part of what they do. The outlaw motorcycle gangs, I would include all of them. Whoever, if you are a criminal organization and a street gang, simple membership in that street gang would be enough to arrest you and charge you with membership. Because if you're a member of that gang, you support that gang, and that gang commits crime, including homicides, assaults, shooting people, murdering people, dealing drugs, running prostitution. If you're involved in that gang actively, then you are responsible for all of that activity that goes on. So therefore, you would be charged under that statute just as a mere member of that gang. And that certainly could have ramifications for you as far as punishment that you may receive for that membership in that criminal organization. That does a couple of things. Number one, it allows the police to take action, okay? Because if you see somebody and they're wearing gang colors, now you can stop them to ask them a question. Are you part of the gang? What does this color on your pants mean? What does this handkerchief you're wearing mean? What does that gang sign that you just threw up when we rolled up, what does that mean? And we know that they're proud of their gang, so they'll probably tell you, I'm a member of whatever organization it is. And that simple membership would be enough to take them into custody. I'm not saying go to jail. I'm saying take them into custody, document who they are, document any tattoos they may have, because tattoos are big in gangs. Gives you a lot of information about the gang and who it is. And then you can find out from these people when you arrest them, what's the gang up to. Now, a lot of them won't tell you, but a lot of people will. They'll give you specifics on what the gang is up to, what criminal activities you're in, and that gives you an opportunity to then go and go after those activities. So I think the Criminal Gang Membership Act of 2018, I've called it about four different things, but you get the idea. That's the first step. Simple membership in the gang may be punishable by, probation for a year, where you have to answer to a probation officer. Are you still engaged with the gang? Are you still hanging out with the gang members? Whatever. And then from there, you'd go to the next level. That would be, taking a position of authority within the gang. Are you a shot caller, as they say? Are you somebody who decides what kind of drugs will be sold? Are you the one who decides what they're going to do with the prostitution? Do you call the hits on other gang members? Do you decide who gets shot, who gets killed? And the higher up in the organization you go, the stiffer the penalties would be. So we do see a lot of activity where we see the federal government going after MS-13, like on Long Island. They went after them because there was a lot of younger people murdered. 16, 17-year-old kids were murdered by the gang members. So the federal government stepped in and went after them under different statutes. What I'm calling for is a specific statute that starts out with, simple membership in the gang is a criminal offense. Because you know what? You can join the Rotarians, you can join the Elks, you can join all kinds of other clubs to spend your time in a worthwhile way. If you join a criminal gang, then you are a detriment and a danger to the rest of society. And guess what? You're a danger to yourself. We see how many young people are getting killed by being in these gangs. We see these drive-by shootings constantly. As Americans, the fact that we sit by and we let this take place to other Americans without taking an affirmative action to stop it means we're all wrong. So that's a couple things going on in the news this week, and that's what I wanted to open up with. So I want to thank everybody for being out there listening to Chasing Justice. It's great fun to be here. So take a look for us. We have a Facebook page. You can go take a look at that. Take a look at our sponsors, right? The Blue Magazine. They just did a tremendous event on police suicide. So if you get Blue Magazine, www.theBlueMagazine, go take a look at that. There will be articles on police suicide and how we can help prevent that amongst our law enforcement officers. MCON IT, fantastic third-party data recovery, anything to do with big data. If you need security in that area, look at MCON IT. And of course, A-plus Technology and Security out of Bayshore, New York. Fantastic visitor management system, camera systems, you name it when it comes to safety and security, programming and equipment. A-plustechnology.com is the place to go. And then of course, my company, jpangaro.com, True Security Design. We provide threat assessments and training for schools, businesses, and law enforcement across the United States. We'll be back in a minute or two with round two here on Chasing Justice.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Bing-a-ling-ding-ding, and welcome to round two here on Chasing Justice. Today we're in the neighborhood, and we have a smaller neighborhood today. We have the Contrarian. I think he didn't come back from vacation yet, so maybe we can find him. We'll drag him back in next week. But what I do have here is I have our man of faith, man of conscience, man of good and decency, Mr. Bill Dallas. Bill, how are you?
I am great today.
That's fantastic.
Feeling good.
I'm glad you're here. And also with us here we have Mr. Race Car Jack, the all-American rock and roll kind of guy. Jack, how are you today?
Great, Joe. Good to be here.
That's excellent. Well, fellas, in the opening segment today here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network, we were talking about the pulling of security clearances from certain people in government. And it was my point of view in that segment that a security clearance should go along with the job you need to do. Okay, it's not a right. You don't have a right to that security clearance. If somebody needed, I don't have a security clearance. Do you have one, Bill?
Yes.
You do?
I have a low-level security clearance that gets me on all the bases without having to go through a lot of...
Because part of your job brings you there.
Exactly.
So you had to be cleared for that.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have top secret clearance? Do you see?
No.
Can you go to the White House and look at stuff?
No.
Can you take
That's
papers?
Something I would love to do.
Can you take papers out of the archives in your underwear like other Democrats have done? No, you
Not
can't
yet.
Do that.
Not yet.
Okay. Jack, do you have a clearance?
No, they won't even let me refill the water cooler at work.
Well, I find that troubling, but I would certainly let you refill the water. If you want to get a glass of water, you can do that. I don't have a clearance. Clearances are reserved for people who have to deal with certain secret information or things that can't go out to the public. And this Brennan, who was the ex-CIA guy, his job is over. And as I said in the first part out there, if Trump needs him or the next president needs him, they call him up, they swear him in and tell him, let's talk about what you know. There's no right to this kind of thing. And he says today he might sue the government because he doesn't want the president to be doing this to other people. What do you think of that, Jack? Can the president do that?
You know, it's just insane to think that these people can hold sway over the head of the executive branch of the United States of America.
Right. It's absurd. Hold sway over the executive branch.
Yes. It's just amazing to me that they think that they can bully, push around, or tell the president of the United States what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. To make somebody the head of the CIA, FBI, what have you, and to allow them the security clearances to the uppermost echelons of our American secrets that we need to keep private to ourselves and to this country, for him not to be able to tell who can be privy to these and who cannot.
It's crazy.
It's insane.
Well, you look at all these people on TV, they're coming out and they're making these innuendos, and they have clearance. And they come in, they make an innuendo that Trump did this, Trump did that. And you say, well, show us the proof. I can't, it's top secret. Then how could you just say a thing like that? See, this is where our three co-equal branches of government are totally in chaos right now. We've let everything to the courts, all right? If the executive branch and the lawmaking branch, the Congress, can't seem to come up with something to do, the Democrats constantly turn to the court to make a rule and make a law. And that is not their position. But that's the default we fall into. We could do whatever we're going to do, and it comes down to which judge do you get? Do you get a conservative judge who rules one way, or do you get a liberal judge who rules another? So you're letting an unelected, in most cases, person make a decision for 300 and something million people because our elected officials can't or won't do the right thing, and because they're afraid of the consequences of coming out and saying something. And now you have these people from one branch saying that they're gonna tell the president what to do. Here's what I've seen is the problem. They cannot stand any time Trump uses any presidential power. This is what just fires them up like gas on a flame. It's okay if he sits there, which they hate that too. But anytime he executes any presidential power, they lose their minds because it reminds them he's the president and he can do what he wants. They're going to go to a court. And what's a judge going to say? Some judge in some federal court who's subordinate to the president of the United States is going to say, Mr. President, you have to give him back his clearance because he's a good liberal. You can't take it away from him. Bill, what do you think?
Don't get me started. You know, Hillary had security clearances. Look what she did to them, to that. You know, I'll go back to my favorite author, Mark Twain. He said, get your facts first, then you can distort them as you please. You know? And that's exactly what the media does. They get the facts and then they say, well, okay, this one is too close to the truth. Let's come over on to the left a little bit further. And that's exactly what's been happening in this country this past year.
Right.
I just can't say enough against the left.
Oh, now, you know? now let's look at this. We just had 300 or so editors of newspapers in the country get together and decide that they're going to write editorials against the President of the United States saying that there is no fake news and they do not slant the news. But by them getting together and doing that against the President, isn't that a slant and doing exactly what he accused them of?
Yes.
How can it not be? I mean, they have a conglomerate of media bias that is just... unprecedented in this country. Right.
So can you see Trump at 5 o'clock in the morning when he gets up and he sees that they're all going to get together and they're going to do this exactly as he said they would? I could just see him call Sarah Sanders. Saying, I have a statement for this afternoon about this collusion between the editors of the newspaper. Voila!
Again.
Exactly what I said. They just proved me right. They constantly prove him right. And is there any justice in that? I mean, that's our constant theme. What's the justice of these newspapers saying they're not fake news, but they don't actually report the news, like you're saying, Bill? They go out and they hate Trump, so they're only looking for things that are going to make him look bad. It's not like they come out and said, let's talk about this. The president did. This is fantastic. And then here's something that he did that is not great. It's just, it's all bad. And even when it's good, it's not really good. There's some backstory to it about why it's bad. That's why people are against the media. And I think they're finally catching on.
And let's not forget what's going on right now with Mueller, with the investigation into Russian collusion. President Trump could use his powers to have all this information squashed if he was worried in any way, shape, or form about what was going to come to light.
Mm-hmm.
He has said many, many times over and over again, which you will not hear in most of the media, slant, again, that he has nothing to hide. He's not going to use his presidential powers to squash any information that comes forward. He's got all of the top level people in his cabinet are going to testify, and he's not going to squash any of the information that they bring forward because he says he has nothing to worry about. There was no collusion on his part, and we don't hear about that. We don't hear about him being as transparent.
No, they make up that he's not being transparent, that he's hiding. You know, I heard recently Julian Assange from WikiLeaks was on, and it's funny how the press hated him when he was against the Democrats, and then they love him when he's against the Republicans. So he's back on the other day, and he's been interviewed, and he says, I have to tell you, this whole looking for collusion with the Russians, I can tell you, I investigated both parties and both candidates in this last election. And Trump, there's nothing. He wanted to run businesses in Russia, and he just couldn't get it together. But Hillary, we found total collusion between Hillary and the Russian government and the money that came pouring into all her different organizations she has. And yet Mr. Mueller just seems to just completely ignore it. Where's a press release that says we are looking at the entire idea of Russian having too much influence in our country, and therefore we're going to look at the Clinton Foundation, we're going to look at Hillary Clinton, we're going to look at this dossier that they're saying my people approved to make this investigation poor. We're going to look at that whole, not a word. They just pretend that that doesn't exist.
I believe all of this may have originated from the fact that when he was running for president, he said, I'm going to do everything that I can to make Russia a friend of our nation. We were friends during the Second World War, and we can be friends again. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. Two of the world superpowers being friends and being together and bringing peace to the world. And I believe that's where it all began.
Right. Well, I think you're right about that. They can't abide by any of that because, again, he is an outsider doing things that none of them could do because there's political reasons for it not to go well. There's political reasons to not get along. It's ridiculous.
But let's just imagine if this Trump was to bring about more jobs and a better economy. What would they have to say then?
I don't know. Bill, have you got anything to say along with the president's accomplishments? Do you have any idea?
You won't hear this from the fake news media, but I made a list. I've got a list of President Trump's accomplishments so far. And I'll go through it as briefly as I possibly can.
And I'll play devil's advocate.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Okay. Trump economic record. He pushed Congress to enact the largest tax cuts for the American people since President Reagan. He cut the top tax rate on businesses from 35 to 21% to make America an attractive place to build a business again. It's been horrible since then.
Hang on. It's all based on Obama's policies, and he's just taking credit for it.
Yeah, this was in place before Obama left.
All right, wait a minute. Trump has signed into more laws to slash unnecessary federal regulations and bureaucratic red tape than any president in American history.
Sure. So his rich friends can pollute the water, pollute the air, and kill everyone because that's what they want to do. And that's what he let them do.
Streamlining the process for big business.
So the rich corporations can take more money from your pocket. Go ahead. Keep going.
Along with that, he's emphasizing making America energy and independent. He's approved the building of the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines, which it goes along with exactly what you said. They hate that.
Well, you know what? They also hate the Midwest. So therefore, Trump's doing that so that the oil spills out and ruins the wheat belt. And destroys all of that.
You're a great
because he
devil.
Hates that.
Trump has saved the American people $3 trillion. That's not billion. That's trillion over the next 10 years by withdrawing from the so-called Paris Climate Accord. What about that?
Well, let me tell you about that. What you see, these hurricanes we have, these storms, these winters coming up, you're going to be buried in snow, and that's because of climate change is real because of you driving an SUV, and Trump just wants everyone to have an SUV and kill the planet. Simple as that.
And most of the SUVs now are 4-cylinder, not 6 or 8-cylinder. So that's another.
That's because
step
of
in the right
because
direction.
The economy, you only got crumbs back, and you can't afford an 8-cylinder engine. What's wrong with you?
Okay, well, the economy under Trump is growing twice as fast as it was under Barack Obama.
That's not true.
That's not true. I don't know.
I don't care about the fact. It's just not true. I don't want to believe it.
Okay, yeah. Well,
facts are inconsequential.
I heard on MSNBC that it's not true, so therefore it's not true.
Well, the economy's created more than 3 million new jobs under Trump.
Obama did that.
And the unemployment rate in the manufacturing sector has dropped to a record low of just 2.6%.
And the carrier plant is closing and all those people are losing their jobs. And everyone's going to lose their jobs. Who wants steel made in America? Nobody. Give it up.
He ended Obamacare.
Oh, so basically you don't want poor people to have health care. You want them to die in the streets. That's what he did, because he hates poor people.
Yes.
He ended the billions of dollars in illegal taxpayer subsidies for insurance companies. Made it easier for lower and middle income folks to buy health insurance by allowing people to buy plans off the exchanges that are half the cost of Obama's care bronze plans.
Ruining Obama's genius ideas.
Well, maybe that's not such a completely horrible thing, because when he ruins the interior of the country with all this oil spilling all over the place, and then the climate change destroys everything else, people will be able to go get a vaccination once in a while. Okay, so maybe that's a half good thing he did.
All right, how about this? He announced that the IRS will no longer fine people who don't have health insurance, because if they can't afford health insurance, how the heck can they afford the fines?
But we need those fines to subsidize our health care.
Well, I'm kind of speechless at that one.
Okay. Securing America's borders. Illegal border crossings have dropped 25% under President Trump. In fact, illegal aliens are now leaving America on their own. President Trump is doubling the number of border patrol officers.
Actually, I think what I saw down there was the white supremacy movement. He gave them uniforms and guns, and he put them on the border to attack any migrants coming across the border. That's why it's down, because he's using his racist friends to go after any innocent people who just want to come over here and live in our country.
How about the fact that he declared war on MS-13? Over 10,000 ultra-violent MS-13 gang members who are already in the United States.
Bill,
squashing their rights.
Squashing their rights. There are 310 million Americans, and you're talking about 10,000 innocent young men and women who just want to get together and have fun, and they call it a gang. Obama took care of them.
Okay. This one is near and dear to my heart.
Okay.
He's stopping our government from punishing Christians for their faith. He issued an executive order prohibiting the U.S. government from discriminating against Christians or punishing expressions of faith affirming First Amendment protections for religious freedom. This executive order also requires the U.S. government to vigorously protect and defend religious freedom and public expression of religious faith.
Okay, so what's next? He's going to protect babies and keep people from killing them when they want to, right?
No.
Taking away those people's rights.
This executive order ends Obama's administration's illegal misuse of the Justice Department and other federal agencies to prosecute and persecute Christians who express their faith.
Well,
Well, I can go on about destroying ISIS and transforming America's courts, protecting the right to life, breaking up the left's control of education in America. How about that?
The basis of the whole thing is this. Mr. Trump ran on the foundation of let's make America great again. And in the words of my friend, Mr. Cuomo, America was never that great.
But he rescinded that.
Well, hang on. Let me do a little public service announcement here. The last segment here on Chasing Justice, where Bill recited some of the so-called accomplishments of the Trump administration, I took the devil's advocate point of view. And I hope I represented my friends on the left appropriately, at least with some of how I understand their ideas, because it's all nonsense. None of that's really true. It's all made up. And, Bill, you have no facts and figures to prove anything there. So I think that's ridiculous. I'm just saying.
I'm speechless.
Well, that's the whole idea. Now, Jack, you just brought something up there. I found that very interesting. And I kind of skirted you on top of that.
No, it's just if someone else on the right had said that America was never that great, they would be persecuted in the news media for weeks over that. If you remember, Hillary Clinton had said, well, America's already great. And now that Andrew Cuomo says this, there's no backlash from the Clinton administration. And there doesn't seem to be any backlash from Mr. Trump. I don't think he has the time.
Right. Well, you know, let me address that. As someone goes out, and I do speak publicly on a lot of different topics, it's easy to say something, as Cuomo said, misartfully. Or you can confuse a fact. That's what he called it. The thing and the proof is in how the person says it. Now, we say a lot of things here on this radio show that we're being devil's advocate or we're trying to be funny about something. When you listen to how he said it, he says, America, make America great again. America never was great. That was a true comment he was making in his mind because he's going up against a very liberal opponent. And therefore, he has to really ignite that base to show he hates America just as much as she does.
And he wants to find out where the limitations of the leftists are.
Yes, it's an interesting thing, but it was really an ugly comment that he made. And he abused everyone who has come before him, especially the legal immigrants who came here and made this country great. So, gents, I want to thank you here in the neighborhood. It's been a nice go-round with you here. Ladies and gentlemen, remember our sponsors, MCON IT, The Blue Magazine, jpangaro.com, and A-Plus Technology and Security. Visit all our friends, and we'll be back with round three in a few minutes.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Bing, bing. Welcome back to segment three, round three, act three, whatever you want to call it here on Chasing Justice. This is our third part of the show, and I'd like to welcome everybody back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I know in the past I've told you if you haven't listened to other shows on this network, you should really go do it. There are some tremendous programs out there. You can listen to Lieutenant Randy Sutton. You can listen to Eva. She's got a tremendous show. You can listen to Viewpoint on the weekends. It's just nonstop here on America Out Loud. Some of the best talk radio you're going to hear anywhere. And you know what? It's all free speech. There's nobody jumping in telling anybody what to talk about. So as we get closer and closer to the start of the school year, this is a topic that we know we come back to here a lot on Chasing Justice, because justice for everybody means living a life free of violence, a life free of danger, and the ability to go about your business without worried about getting shot in the face, as they say. So one of the things we talk about as we're getting closer to the start of the school year is, are these schools getting themselves ready? Is the message finally catching on that it can happen anywhere at any time, that being an active shooter or some type of a workplace violence incident? Can these things happen to you? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about a program that we do called Crisis in the Classroom. And the purpose of Crisis in the Classroom is to help any staff member in a school or a business, actually anywhere in life, how do you de-escalate a crisis? You know, what exactly goes into that? So first thing we got to define is, you know, what a crisis is. And if you look it up, you'll see that a crisis is considered a person who's in crisis when there's a major change in their life about to happen or has happened. So we can look at that and say, you know, what about a marriage falling apart, a financial loss, a job loss? What if somebody got arrested? You know, maybe they had problems and now they're going to potentially go to jail. That can put people in crisis. What about a mental health crisis? There are lots of people that have mental health issues, and we do not deal with them properly in our country. Mental health issues is still very taboo. People don't want to talk about it. So therefore, we have lots and lots of people that we could be helping if we had a different point of view on mental health issues. So a person who's having a mental health issue is also a crisis, a person who could be in crisis. It's an impending change, right? So this can put somebody in crisis. So when we look at that, we say, where have we seen that? Have we seen marriages go bad? Have we seen people betrayed? Have we seen people lose their jobs? Absolutely. And we see that can set them off. You combine that with some type of undiagnosed or diagnosed mental condition. You add in maybe alcohol or drugs or some other stressors in life, and next thing you know, you have a big problem. So we have to understand what we're talking about, what a crisis is. So the next thing you have to understand is, what's the difference between a person in crisis and an active shooter? Now, I guess you could say that the linkage between them is obviously a person in crisis is acting out, usually in a violent way, because something has happened to them. The important part there for you to remember is that it's something that happened to them, either real or perceived. It doesn't have to actually be real. Because remember the mental health component here. The person can actually think you've done something to them, the company has done something to them, the school has done something to them, whatever. And it may or may not actually have happened, but they believe it's happened. So that's their perception. All right? And we look at that. And now that person who is in crisis and maybe brings a weapon to work or to school, maybe targets somebody, maybe they throw a couple rounds, maybe they scream and holler, maybe they want to vent their anger. That's a little bit different than our active shooter person. The active shooter person often has trigger events in their life, whatever they are, either slow boil, and it brings them to the point that they're now going to act out, or it can be a crisis moment, and now they go act out. The difference is, when they arrive on the scene, there's usually not much chance of talking to them. The active shooter has set it up that they're going to gain access to whatever facility you're in, and then they're going to attack as many people as they come across as quickly as they can. So there's not a lot of time that you're going to get to talk to an active shooter person to de-escalate them like you would a person in crisis. So as long as we can separate those two, now could there be a moment where that active shooter person, maybe you can talk to them? I don't know. It could happen, but the historical record doesn't show us that. The historical record shows they come in and they attack as many people as they have access to as quickly as they can. Because in this day and age, even our active shooters that are out there, they know as soon as they announce themselves at the front door, however they make attempt to enter your facility, they know who's coming. They know the police are coming. They know armed security is on the way. And they know that that's going to end usually in one of two different ways. One, the police or security will apply force, which will end the event, or they take their own lives. So you have to differentiate between these two things, an active shooter and a person in crisis. So right now, as school begins, I'm going to talk about crisis in the classroom. And some of the pointers, some of the things that I can pass on to my teacher friends, custodian friends, lunch personnel, administrator, everybody. There's things we need to know about a person in crisis. there is what we call a trigger event that sets them off. Now, the word trigger, we know what a trigger is. A trigger on a weapon, on a gun, is the thing that makes the gun fire, right? It's what sets the gun off from shooting. So a trigger event for a person in crisis is whatever stimulus pushed them to the point of losing control. So an example that I had actually dealt with would be a young man who had a difficult home life. Ninth grade kid, difficult home life. Mom and dad were kind of missing from the picture. There was alcohol and drugs involved. The kid was failing at school. He was having lots and lots of problems. And there was a physical abuse problem at home. So his father's way of trying, I guess, to help the boy would be to threaten him. If you don't do well in school, look at me, look at my life. If you don't do well in school, I'm going to discipline you. And what he meant by that is he would beat the kid up. So the kid would go to school. He didn't have a good home life. He wasn't really excelling in his schoolwork. And the teacher failed him on a grade. You failed because you didn't do this homework. And the kid got very upset. And, you know, the teacher let the kid make it up. But a report went home to the parents. The father saw it and disciplined the kid physically. So now the kid's all upset about his grades. He's not very good at school. He doesn't get a lot of support at home. And in his school, he doesn't want to tell the teacher, you know, I get beat up when I go home if I don't do well. So the kid is dealing with all of this at a ninth grade level. This is a young person, right? 16 years old. Well, next thing you know, there's another test. The kid doesn't study for it. He doesn't do well. He's all amped up, and the teacher tells him, you're getting an F, you're failing, you're going to fail this thing, and you're going to fail this class. That was the trigger event for this young man, because it wasn't so much that he failed the test, because he didn't have the capacity to study, he didn't have the home life to support that or whatever. It was what was going to happen to him afterward is what he was thinking of. And he immediately got upset with the teacher and said, well, why would I get an F? I did the work. And the teacher explained to him, you didn't do the work. You know, you wrote your name on the paper, you wrote some answers down, but they're all wrong, you're out of context, it doesn't make sense, etc., etc. This just amped the kid up even more. Now he's being embarrassed in front of his classmates, on top of, all he's thinking about is, I have to go home with another F, and the beating he's going to get. So this kid starts acting out louder and louder and louder. Next thing you know, he's flipping over tables, he's screaming and hollering, he's threatening the teacher, the kids in the class are scared, out come the phones, they start videoing the kid. And it turns into a real mess. The teacher had to call for help. Security had to come down and remove the kid. He was removed from the school. The police were called. I can't imagine that it made the kid's life any better when he got home, that he was removed from school by the police, from a father who was going to beat him up over an F. I can imagine what happened when the police showed up at the house. So we have to look at these kind of crises. Can we see violence beginning before it starts? We can. All right, so one of the things we have to understand as people, if you are in a position of authority and you start to see that someone is agitated, the things that are important to say are things to remember not to build on that agitation. What you want to do is you got to think of a person in crisis like a great big balloon that's all blown up and ready to pop. And that balloon is straining to keep from popping. And that's the person in crisis. You, as the person in authority, as the boss, the coworker, if you're in charge of whatever they're doing, or the teacher, you're standing there with a pin. Now, the things that you say can be like the pin hitting the balloon. One of the things that we do, and a lot of people do when you're in a position of authority, is we use what's called action imperatives. An action imperative is when you give an order and you expect that person to respond exactly the way you gave the order. Bobby, sit down and stop screaming. I don't want to hear about it. Your fault you failed this test. Now sit down in that classroom. A person in crisis is not going to react well in general to an action imperative. They are in crisis, you see? And by you saying things, giving them demands, that's opposite of them venting, which is what we want them to do. We want them to vent some of that air out of the balloon so that it's not ready to pop. By you saying certain things, especially action imperatives, and treating that person as though they're completely rational at the moment, that's where we make the mistake when we deal with people in crisis. When someone's in crisis, you can recognize that kids might be upset. people at work might be upset. When somebody goes to that next level, they stand up, they start turning over desks, they start becoming irrational in their speech, yelling and hollering. You have to recognize this. This is not a normal situation. This is a crisis. So equally as important as what you say is what you don't say. Okay, so you have to recognize, this is now escalating to the point where it could get violent. And people get attacked all the time when things reach that escalation point. So what would you say? Well, you have to remember, there's an old saying out there about how people listen. And the saying, it says, people don't listen to understand, they listen to respond. So an action imperative is a response. Sit down, shut up, get out of the car, put your hands on the car, whatever the things, police use them all the time. All right, so when we're saying this, now a person's in crisis, you could say, listen, Bobby, I understand you're very upset about this grade. After class, why don't we sit down and talk about it? Maybe there's something we can do about it. I'd like to understand why you failed the class, why you failed the test. I see that you put effort into it. We can talk about it after the class, okay? Is that okay? Because people that are in crisis are self-centered. They're looking at their pain. They're looking at what's going on with them. All right, they're not necessarily concerned with anybody else around them, including you. So if you kind of diffuse that by telling them, I hear you, I see you're upset, and then you give them some way to vent some of that, you know, okay, so you say you did the work, but you didn't get the right answers on here. We'll sit down and we'll talk about that later and see if I can help you through this. That might be enough to diffuse that person enough that they don't go to the next level. Okay, because somebody hears me. A lot of people in crisis, my experience has been as a crisis negotiator, is that people often feel that you don't hear them. You know, they're trying to say something and they're frustrated and nobody's listening. It's not my fault. It's not right. It's not fair. And we turn around and say, it doesn't matter. You're the one who caused the problem. You have to deal with it. And that can be like the pin popping the balloon. So I get a lot of people when I teach this part of the course, they'll say to me, so basically what you're saying is you got to placate these people so that you know they don't go, well, you're not dealing with a regular person at this point to placate them in a negative where, well, you just kiss their butts and you tell them whatever they want to hear and all that kind of pablum-y stuff. That's not the point. I'm talking about when you're dealing with someone in crisis, when someone is about ready to go off and cause violence. This is why you de-escalate them. These are specific techniques, what you have to do. All right, so it's not a touchy-feely thing where you just, Bob, you're right, the test was too hard and I'm sorry. No, you want to de-escalate that person by taking their level of anxiety and anger down by letting them know you hear them and you'll talk to them later. You give them a little bit of hope that maybe this can change. That gives you a couple of options. Number one, a lot of times crisis will pass. If we can get that person past that emotional moment when they're all amped up, sometimes that will actually start to diminish on its own. If you can get them to back it down a notch or two, they sit down, they calm down, they take a deep breath. Okay, all right, maybe I can fix this. It also gives you time that if you think you're going to bring it up, because you're not changing the grade, the kid failed the class. But maybe you can look at it and decide, could you have done something different? Does the kid have a learning disability? Is there some other thing he should have? Should he have an IEP and he doesn't have one? You know, there's lots of things you can look at. But if it turns out you're going to maintain the F grade, you can now have somebody else there with you. You can have security stand by when you talk to the kid to maintain the safety and security of everyone. So crisis stuff is really about being tactical and practical. You want to be practical. You want to talk somebody down. You don't want that balloon to pop. But you also got to be smart about it. If you're going to talk to somebody and you know they're going to get amped up or they're already upset, you got to be able to protect everybody. So you got to kind of have a plan. So that's why we think of these things ahead of time. And another thing I'm going to give you before we end this segment here, and I have a lot more on crisis intervention in the course that I teach, crisis in the classroom, crisis in the workplace, as well as I've written a lot of articles on this. You can do a Google search of my name and find them. And you can also look here on the America Out Loud Radio Network webpage, and my articles will be up there. There's a thing called emotionally labeling. All right, as human beings, when we're upset and we're yelling and hollering and we have these emotions going on, if we hear the emotion voiced, we have a tendency to latch onto it. All right, so if somebody's screaming and hollering, I can't believe you're going to fail me on this test. I worked really hard. This isn't fair. You might want to say something like, boy, you sound really angry. You're right, I'm angry. I worked on this, and it's not fair that I couldn't do the homework because you gave it to me at the last minute. Boy, you sound really frustrated. I am frustrated. How many times I got to tell you that I don't have life like everybody else? I got to go home. I have to go to work. Boy, you sound really angry about having to work at home. I am angry about it. And what happens is, every time you hear an emotion and you say it, you label that emotion, and the other person latches onto it. They're venting. They're getting to vent some of that venom, some of that anger. The balloon starts to go down. Even if it's just a small, tiny amount, it's not on the verge of popping all on its own. So you emotionally label what's going on. Hey, boy, you sound angry. You sound sad. You sound mad. You sound frustrated. Whatever you hear, you say that. And you keep in the conversation. You keep in that conversation. And sometimes it takes a long time. I've been out on jobs for hours and hours and hours, emotionally labeling, going round and round and round, to get people to come down off that ledge, so to speak, of crisis. Deflate that balloon enough that they can maybe regain some control over what they're doing, or give you the opportunity to safeguard and secure the situation better. All right, so those are a couple of quick tips as we start to move towards school. If anybody is interested in anything more than that, you can certainly reach out to me. It's jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. That's my email. You can reach out there. I take questions all the time. I'd be happy to give you some guidance if you needed it, find some resources for you if I could. And you can also have me come out and teach the program to you and your people at your workplace or your school. So that's what we got for you here this week on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. And remember, don't be a part of the problem. Be a part of the solution, and we'll see you next week.